Other parts of Gaza were also targeted by the regime's military. In one of the bloodiest attacks, around a dozen civilians were killed and many others injured after Israeli air and artillery strikes targeted the Al-Tufa neighborhood in Gaza City. 8 civilians, including women and children, were killed in an Israeli attack on a home in the central city of Deir al-Balah. Israeli strikes also claimed several lives in Jabalia, northern Gaza. The Israeli genocide has killed nearly 50,700 Palestinians so far, leaving over 115,300 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israel's attacks across the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
Following the barrage of the Palestinian rockets, which was launched from Gaza Strip into the depth of the Palestinian occupied territories, basically Ascalon and Ashdod cities. And according to Al-Qassam Brigades, that they claim the responsibility of launching this barrage of rockets. And according to them, it came as a response to the ongoing and non-stop Israeli massacres and atrocities committed against the Palestinian civilians in Gaza Strip. And as you know, we're talking about 10 rockets were launched from the central area of Gaza Strip, targeting those areas in Ascalon and Ashdod cities. And according to the Israeli sources, that five rockets out of the 10 were intercepted by the Israeli Iron Dome rockets. And this means clearly that the other ones landed and hit and impacted their targets there. And according to the Israeli sources, that 27 injuries were handled by the hospitals, and they have been given the medical care there. So this is the largest barrage to be fired from Gaza Strip since the resumption of this genocidal war till this moment, and it serves another testament that all these operations and the ongoing and non-stop Israeli genocidal attacks are still, as you know, futile to stop the Palestinian resistance. And
Palestinian officials in Gaza say Israeli forces have committed, quote, a shocking crime of genocide against children over the past 20 days. Gaza's government media office said nearly 500 Palestinian children have been killed in Israel's barbaric attacks since the regime resumed its genocidal war on the territory. It added that entire families are being wiped out and childhood is buried under the rubble. The media office strongly condemned Israel's systematic and deliberate policy of killing Palestinian children in Gaza. It held the regime, the US and their Western allies complicit in the genocide and fully responsible for the continued massacres targeting children in Gaza. The office also condemned the global inaction in the face of Israeli crimes. It said the continued shameful international silence and failure to hold Israel accountable clearly proves complicity in a genocide that is taking place in the full view of the world. The office also urged the international community, human rights organizations, and international courts to take immediate action to halt Israel's crimes against children and civilians in Gaza. Political analyst Wilma Leon says the Israeli genocide against children in the besieged Gaza Strip goes unreported in the Western media.
Internationally, it goes unreported, especially in the West. It's going unreported. I've had, you know, the news on throughout the day, throughout the entire weekend. That's not been discussed here in terms of Western press. And in fact, they had here in the United States the hands-off protests over the weekend targeting a lot of the policies from the Trump administration, and the issue of Gaza, the issue of genocide, the issue of America supporting genocide was not at the top of the list. When you listen to Senator Cory Booker with his 25-hour historic speech from last Tuesday, he did not raise the issue in a 25-hour genocide. The words genocide never came through his lips. So it happens simply because it is allowed to happen. And one of the major reasons that it is allowed to happen is that the Palestinians have been dehumanized to such a point that hardly anybody cares.
The Hamas resistance movement has launched a retaliatory operation against the occupied Palestinian territories in response to Israel's renewed genocide in Gaza. Hamas's military wing, Al-Qassam Brigades, said several rockets were fired at the occupied city of Ashdod. It added that the operation was in response to the crimes committed by the Israeli forces against Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. The rocket attack caused sirens to sound in the occupied cities of Ashdod and Ashkelon. The Israeli military confirmed the attack, saying approximately 10 projectiles were fired from Gaza into the occupied territories within a few minutes. It claimed that most of the rockets were intercepted. However, videos posted online clearly show that Hamas's rockets reached the occupied lands, causing damage to settlers' cars and homes. There have been no reports on the possible casualties so far. Israeli forces have killed and injured more civilians in the occupied West Bank as they continue their violent raids on Palestinian towns and cities. In one of the latest incursions, the regime's forces fatally shot a 14-year-old American-Palestinian boy near the town of Turmus Aya, northeast of the city of Ramallah. The child was critically injured by Israeli forces' live fire and was later pronounced dead. Two more children were injured in the attack, one of whom sustained a gunshot wound to the abdomen, while the other was shot in the thigh. Local sources say Israeli forces obstructed the movement of ambulances leaving Turmus Aya, deliberately blocking their way. In a separate development, Israeli troops forced Palestinians to leave their homes in the Nur Shams refugee camp east of Tulkarem while arresting a number of young people. The camp has been under continuous Israeli aggression for the past 57 days. Israeli forces also demolished Palestinians' homes and agricultural structures in the Ras al-Ahmar area southeast of Tubas. Our correspondent in the West Bank, Neha Hamed, joined us earlier with the latest updates on the Israeli raids across the occupied Palestinian territory. Let's take a listen.
The Palestinian child, Omar Mohammed Rabir, 14 years old child, was shot dead by the IOF bullets in the town of Turmus Aya, to the northeast of Ramallah. According to the IOF statement, the unit 663 have performed this targeting operation. And of course, as we are seeing every day, whenever a Palestinian child is targeted, the pretense is always ready that this child was endangering Israeli civilians. Of course, as the statement says, and as the statement declares, that those three Palestinian children were a threat to the Israeli forces in the area and to the Israeli settlers in the area. Of course, according to eyewitnesses, there was no threat whatsoever on the raiding forces, the IOF forces that are all the time present in the entrance of the village of Turmus Aya, of course, making the lives of the Palestinians, making the move of the Palestinians extremely difficult. And this force is just over there to ease the lives and the movement of the Israeli settlers who have attacked Turmus Aya more than once.
The Israeli regime continues to violate the ceasefire agreement with Lebanon, carrying more airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. One of the regime's latest strikes targeted the Zabkin region in southern Lebanon, killing two civilians. For the third time in a week, an Israeli air raid hit a building near the Lebanese army headquarters in the town of Nakoura in southern Lebanon. The regime's helicopters also raided Nakoura while dropping sound bombs on the southern town of Eita al-Sharb. Since the ceasefire agreement with Lebanon entered into effect in November 2024, Israel has repeatedly violated the deal. The regime has defied all calls to adhere to its obligations under the agreement, including the withdrawal of its forces from southern Lebanon. Welcome back. Various areas in Yemen continue to be targeted by American warplanes as the United States presses ahead with its aggression against the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, the country's capital city of Sana'a was the focal point of fresh U.S. attacks. At least three airstrikes targeted Al-Jabal al-Aswad area in Sana'a governorate. The attacks left 4 civilians dead and over 2 dozens wounded, including 11 women and a child. American warplanes also launched 4 airstrikes on Kamaran Island in the governorate of Hodeidah in western Yemen. The northwestern Saada governorate was rocked with 3 strikes, while several air raids hit Hajjah governorate's Abs district. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S. attacks target civilian buildings, causing fatalities and injuries among civilian population. The fallout continues after a recent airstrike in Yemen's al-Hudaydah province. U.S. President Donald Trump claims the strike targeted military leaders involved in naval operations. But Yemeni officials tell a very different story. Dr. Latifa Boshali reports from Sana'a.
U.S. President Donald Trump released a video claiming success in targeting what he described as a meeting of higher-ranking military officials. According to Trump, those struck were allegedly coordinating upcoming naval operations, a move he hailed as a strategic victory.
It's well known that part of Yemeni customs and traditions is for people to gather on the first day of Eid to celebrate. The enemy exploited this and targeted the gathering, while the head of the devil, Trump, claimed it was a military meeting. The Yemeni army remains in its military barracks, safeguarding its equipment, and was not affected by this strike, which clearly targeted civilians.
Yemeni military sources quickly refuted those claims, asserting that the airstrike did not hit any military targets. Instead, they say it struck a civilian gathering during Eid celebrations in Al-Hudaydah, one of many such peaceful events happening across the country. The sources stressed that none of the victims had any connection to naval or military activity.
The American enemy committed a crime by bombing unarmed, innocent civilians after its failure and inability to confront the Yemeni armed forces, achieving nothing but the targeting of civilians and Yemen's infrastructure. There is pressure on the U.S. administration, and that's what pushed Trump to mislead the American people by claiming he targeted Houthi leaders, when in reality, our military leadership is on the front lines and under the protection of God Almighty.
The same sources went on to describe the strike as part of the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. They argued that the attack, which resulted in dozens of deaths and injuries, highlights what they view as the moral and strategic failure of the U.S. administration.
Despite the destruction and loss, the people of Yemen continue to show remarkable resilience, even as airstrikes claim innocent lives. Communities gather, mourn, and rebuild, refusing to let war define their future. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Press TV has obtained leaked information indicating that Nigerian security forces are planning a raid on the Islamic movement in Nigeria under orders from the United States and Israel. Sources close to the leader of the Islamic movement, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, informed Press TV that they expect security forces to carry out a raid at any moment. They called on international media to shed light on their plight and help amplify their voice globally. The Nigerian government has banned the activities of the Islamic movement under pressure from Israel and Western powers, particularly the United States. The movement has been routinely targeted by Nigerian security forces. During this year's International Quds Day, Nigerian security forces brutally attacked the movement's members, killing 26 people in the capital, Abuja. They also detained over 300 others, many of them children. Authorities have seized the bodies of the victims and denied medical aid to the wounded. The Islamic Human Rights Commission has voiced concern over the reports, warning that such actions could signal or serve as a cover for even more extreme violence against the movement. Earlier, we talked to researcher and political analyst Christopher Halali. He said the Islamic movement in Nigeria is viewed by the United States and Israel as a threat to their regional interests.
This is, of course, a grave situation. We've known that the Islamic movement in Nigeria has been under surveillance, has been under brutal oppression, state-sanctioned oppression, for many years now. And we know, of course, that Sheikh Zakzaki is considered to be a living martyr because of this. And of course, we've seen dozens of the followers of this movement, pious Muslims, being killed by the security forces. forces in Nigeria at the behest of the United States and its proxy forces, and of course the Zionist regime. Now, of course, the Islamic movement, which shows its solidarity to the Palestinian people, to the Islamic revolution in Iran, and to the axis of resistance, is seen as a grave threat to U.S. and regional, to U.S. interests in the region, and of course to its regional proxies. And this, of course, is an ongoing situation and is further cause for concern as the escalations by the security forces in Nigeria increase.
Thank you for listening. Take care.
iranradio.ir. What you just heard was an Iraddy English radio program.
In the limelight.
The decline of U.S. imperialism is an undeniable and critically important fact that must be integrated into the worldview of the Global South, and Iran's resistance has played a decisive role in exposing this reality and revealing the true nature of the enemy by educating the global majority that the United States wants to deceive the world public opinion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, U.S. President Donald Trump received his answer even before his letter reached Tehran. This is the kind of power discourse that Iran continues to generate as a major global power. While much of the world is fearful of the new U.S. administration, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, stands out as a model for the global majority, demonstrating how to firmly reject imperialist bullying and threat. Iran's role continues to be critical. Unlike both Western-backed regimes and even other sovereign nations that negotiate out of fear, Iran does not seek peace on imperialist terms. It does not extend one hand for diplomacy while submitting to economic blackmail and military threats with the other. The message is clear. Real peace cannot be imposed or dictated by oppressors. It must be won by the oppressed. No country has suffered from American imperialism as severely as Iran, making it both logical and necessary for Iranian leadership to work toward reducing the hardships of its people. In 2015, President Hassan Rouhani mobilized society and ran his election campaign under the slogan of removing sanctions through diplomacy and engaging with the international community. However, the so-called honeymoon period following the JCPOA agreement failed to bring tangible improvements to the daily lives of ordinary Iranians. The government's position at the time was that both the nuclear program and the economy should function together, and the way to achieve this was through an agreement with the West to lift sanctions. This assumption that the West was reliable and would uphold its commitments was a serious miscalculation. 3 years later, Trump took office and shattered the democratic facade of U.S. policy toward Iran. The hypocrisy was not on the agenda anymore. White supremacy was being served raw and plain. No process or manipulation was needed. Unlike previous U.S. administrations that framed their imperialist agenda with a thin layer of diplomacy, Trump abandons pretense. Previous administrations inflicted harm with a smile, masking their aggression behind rhetoric. Trump's openly hostile approach made it harder for American hegemony to maintain its deception. But beneath both tactics, whether a handshake or a threat, the reality remained unchanged: white supremacy and violence, both in essence and in action. At the time, the leader of the Islamic Revolution warned the government of the time about its misplaced trust in the West and predicted the consequences of the deal. Over the years, he has framed resistance from different perspectives, consistently exposing the imperialist nature of the enemy's behavior. This reflects a fundamental aspect of Iran's approach. The governments make decisions, while the leader provides guidance on what best works for the sake of national sovereignty and interests. Society, in turn, learns from experience, both domestically and internationally, adapting and growing through lessons. A recent speech in a meeting with university students clarified the government's direction. The Iranian people have already traveled this path, and the results they have witnessed firsthand cannot be denied. This is why the leader of the Islamic Revolution stated, "If the purpose of negotiations is to lift the sanctions, negotiating with this U.S. administration will not remove sanctions. It will make the sanctions even tighter and increase the pressure." This reasoning is not speculation. It is drawn from lived experience, from decades of confrontation with U.S. policies that have repeatedly proven their hostility toward Iran. Real peace needs a revolutionary approach to dismantle the current global system and build a new one that lifts the oppressed, protects human rights, and brings dignity and well-being. This kind of peace is not just about absence of war. It represents spirituality and beliefs that liberation is real and possible. In this way, Iran is the revolutionary force, and its ideas are shaping a new global order. No country supports peace more than Iran, and no one in Iran stands for peace more than its leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He remarked, "Had we wanted to build nuclear weapons, America could not have stopped us. The fact that we don't have nuclear weapons and are not pursuing them is because we ourselves don't want them for specific reasons." This statement highlights Iran's approach to nuclear technology. Iran has already demonstrated its scientific and technological capabilities, but has chosen not to develop nuclear weapons. This decision is based on ideology, not weakness, even as both its enemies and allies possess such weapons. The Zionist entity, known for its aggressive actions, holds nuclear arms without any moral restraint. Yet, despite these circumstances, Iran has deliberately refrained from pursuing nuclear weapons, something it could achieve overnight if it wished. These remarks illustrate Iran's commitment to peace, surpassing any current global power. This is the power discourse that pushes back hostility while safeguarding peace and Iran's integrity at the same time. Leader of the Islamic Revolution has always made it clear that revolutionary Islamic principles, equality, dignity, and justice, are not against practical governance. Iran has proved that these values can guide a country without surrendering to imperialist powers. In Iran, despite the global false norm, pragmatism is compatible with ideology, and focusing only on power and material interest is not considered the righteous strategy. Iran is a unique example of a country that can grow and succeed while still keeping its moral values. It challenges the idea that we must give up ideals to get real results. Instead, Iran shows that revolutionary values can lead to real actions that make people's lives better. So, what is the solution for the Iranian people to endure less hardship and live the economically advanced life they deserve while preserving national dignity? The answer has been provided over time. A resilient economy that relies on its own people and objectives instead of having hope in the enemy. Faith in the enemy must be replaced with faith in ourselves, strengthening ties with our neighbors and allies to neutralize the impact of sanctions. The goal is not just to resist, but to make sanctions ineffective, ensuring they cannot break us. This is only possible if Iran's economy is built on the understanding that sanctions are permanent, but we must become stronger than the sanctions themselves. This requires developing indigenous power, an independent technology that is self-sufficient. The failure of sanctions must be embedded into Iran's governance model so that the enemy, not the Iranian people, bears the consequences of its maximum pressure campaign. Since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Iran has remained committed to its principles, prioritizing the dignity of its people over external pressures, including the hardest imperialist sanctions. While many countries fear the consequences of standing up to the U.S. and its allies, Iran has remained steadfast. And now, with Donald Trump back in the administration, the chaos is even more apparent. Even Washington's closest allies are unsettled, unsure how to handle a president who refuses to maintain the illusion of a united Western coalition because that coalition does not exist. The decline of U.S. imperialism is an undeniable and critically important fact that must be integrated into the worldview of the global South, and Iran's resistance has played a decisive role in exposing this reality and revealing the true nature of the enemy by educating the global majority that the U.S. wants to deceive the world public opinion. The cracks are widening, not only in Washington's control over the global South, but also within the Western alliance itself. Iran may not be solely responsible for the fall of U.S. hegemony, but it remains the strongest, most consistent force challenging it. And that is why Iran is the heart of the global revolution.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atar, the host of this program. Within the studio are two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Nur Muhammad. Sheikh Nur Muhammad, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, there are so many questions and doubts about the concept of hijab, especially for the ladies. So what is the perfect form of hijab, and is covering the hair part of the hijab for women or not? Sheikh Nur Muhammad, let's start with you, brother. How does Islam introduce hijab for women for us? I mean, is there any clear picture given to us about the concept of hijab according to the Quran and the Hadith and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Obviously, yes. We have at least two verses in the Noble Quran explicitly, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talking about the concept of hijab. And I'm really wondering that many people maybe are not aware of these two verses, at least these two verses of Noble Quran. Mm-hmm. in chapter Ahzab and chapter Nur, and they are arguing about the concept of hijab. Inshallah, I will talk about these beautiful verses of Noble Quran.
That's right.
But prior to that, let me talk about a bit about the philosophy of hijab. Why this concept is important in Islamic law.
That's right.
You know that I think obviously nowadays, I think it's very clear that's why hijab is important in Islam. Mm-hmm. It's part of the Islamic laws. You know that in Islamic perspective, women cannot be considered as a sexual puppet.
Okay.
Or you may call it a sexual toy. Actually, woman has her own
dignity and honor.
Dignity That's and personality. Right. And Islam wanted to maintain this dignity.
That's right.
This is very important.
This is called, the objectification process.
Exactly.
Or we can say commodification of the women. That's
if
right.
If you look at the social media, in any propaganda, unfortunately, in some propaganda, you find that they have been used, the women, as a tools, mm-hmm. as sexual tools, in order to sell some kind of products.
All right.
Islam wanted to ban this, phenomenon. Wanted to give some kind of dignity and personality for the woman. When you talk to the woman, you should respect her. This is part of the, woman's rights.
Mm-hmm.
I think hijab is woman's rights.
That's right.
They have to maintain their personality, their dignity. And when you talk, you have to respect her. Okay, look That's at right. her personality, not look at her beauty only.
Okay.
This is very important.
So if we consider hijab as the women's rights on that time, nobody is allowed to violate such a rights, we can
exactly.
say. And if a person, a lady herself, does not observe hijab, it means that she herself is violating the right, her own rights, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay.
I don't know why some people, they want to talk in this very negatively
okay.
about the
That's
concept
right.
of hijab.
Okay.
I'll talk
That's
about
right.
this
okay.
issue more.
So in different cultures all around the world, we could see different forms of hijab for the ladies. But the major question is that, is covering the hair an obligatory part of hijab for the ladies according to Islam or not, Shaykh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, of course, absolutely. This is the part of the hijab that is, there is a consensus among all the different schools of Islam and sects of Islam that hair must be covered. Because in the Holy Quran, Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the verse number 24, ayah number 31, says that, and tell the believing women to lower their gaze and guard their chastity and not to reveal their adornments except what normally appears. Let them draw their veils over their chests.
Uh-huh.
From this part that
so
you need...
So veil their chest, it means
yeah,
from
yeah.
head to chest,
yeah, exactly.
isn't it? Okay.
Yeah. From this part, yudnina alayhinna min jalabibihinna, which says that draw their veils over their chests.
All right.
Indicates that this hair scarf or khimar must cover the hair,
okay.
neck, and bosom.
That's right.
So this is what all Muslim sects among Sunnis and Shias all agree that this kind of hijab must be observed by the Muslim ladies and women.
And according to Arabic fiqh al-lugha, khimar
yes.
is not a thin type of cloth.
Yes.
It's a kind of thick one, the other part of which cannot be seen easily.
Yeah, because
okay.
There are some technical terms in the Holy Quran.
Right.
One is, for example, khimar. Khimar
yes.
is a head scarf
yes.
that covers the head, neck, and head, neck,
yes.
and chest.
Yes.
And then jilbab. Jilbab is a kind of loose outer garment
uh-huh.
covering the entire body.
So it's
body.
Not tight.
It's,
That's
it's
right.
the entire
it's
body.
One.
Yes.
That's right. Okay.
And also we have abaya or chador that
yes.
is, or even according to some of the sects, niqab.
That's
that should,
actually,
again,
That's
yes,
right.
yes
That's right.
a full length kind of cloak.
Yes.
So these are the things that it should covers cover all the entire body except those part of the body like face and hand
right.
that normally appears. So from these things we understand that in hijab, when we observe hijab, we should cover our hair
okay.
For the ladies.
The Western thinkers and the liberal capital world says that hijab is a type of limitation for the women. You are limiting the freedom of ladies. How do you answer this question, Sheikh Nur Muhammad?
I think those people who actually use, as I said, women, as a sexual toy, they are limiting the woman, not the, you know, for any concept of the hijab.
Okay.
You know that actually, let me mention one point. We have different cultures.
Yes.
Okay. We are not talking about the cultures. Maybe in Indian culture, I don't know, in Pakistani culture, many other in different countries, they have their own covering. But what matters is to have the kind of Islamic covering, as my brother mentioned, in the at least two verses of Noble Quran, we have the concept of hijab or concept of kind of covering for the woman. But it can be different in different cultures.
Right.
Okay, we do not want to focus on, for example, one culture, Iranian culture, or, for example, different cultures of hijab. But after all, what is obligatory for women not to attract the sexual attention of the opposite gender?
All right.
This is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Not to walk in a way or cover in a way that attract the attention.
That's right.
You know, it's some kind of nudity, you know.
Right.
It attract the attention of the opposite gender.
Okay.
And it's kind of the lost culture.
That's right.
You know, this is important in Islam.
Unfortunately, the concept of hijab and covering itself somehow is deviated. I mean,
yeah, it's possible.
This hijab style or something like that. The ladies who we can say are in photo shoots or something like that with hijab.
Yeah.
We can say lots of cosmetics and the makeup on the face. And with hijab,
we can say,
again, we could see that. This is the kind of tabarruj, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I mean, a person might be showing off, a lady especially, through hijab. This is, again, a big sin, Shaykh.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. Yeah. I'm talking
That's
about
right.
this point. And,
right.
You know, what matters is to not to attract the attention of the opposite gender. And actually, the concept of hijab is for the serenity of woman, you know, to have the very beautiful, I don't know, a very a lovely, you know, family.
That's right.
To enjoy being with other people, you know, to act with other people.
Okay.
To maintain your family.
That's right.
It is very important.
All right.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
As most of the converts to Islam, especially the ladies, observe hijab to the full extent. I mean, if you look at those ladies who convert from the non-Islamic world to the Islamic one, their hijab is really complete and beautiful. I mean, and when you ask them why hijab in this form, they say because it gives you a kind of honor and it's kind of, we can say, dignity and respect. I mean, and the men, especially in the Western world, cannot get close to you as near, as private as they were before. So all in all, hijab is a kind of protection for the women and not
exactly,
a kind of
yeah.
limitation. But Shaykh Rouhani, is it possible that hijab be considered as a limit for some ladies when they are in the society? Is it good or bad? I mean, because nowadays in the modern world, the ladies are an inevitable part of a society. So can hijab really ban them from presence in some parts of the society?
Of course not. You know, when we talk about hijab, observing hijab, Islam is a religion of fitra or nature, because we believe that Islamic teachings and doctrines and rulings are completely compatible with our nature. As Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the creator of us, He knows our essence and our nature. Then all the rulings that we should observe Islamically, they are also completely compatible with this nature that we have. What does it mean? It means that if you now go and interview those ladies in the modern world,
yes,
who, for example, display themselves in the public,
yes,
or, for example, like co-workers with the men in
yes.
army, I don't know, in cinema, in movies,
yes. Yes.
in many kind of offices or places, even in universities.
All right.
When they display to the, let's say, to the men,
yes.
What are the natural,
showing their bodies
yeah,
or
yeah,
something
what
like
are
that
the natural reaction of men?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look at the statistics,
okay,
we naturally come to this conclusion that these ladies themselves, particularly those who, for example, are like actress.
Yeah, in the cinema,
if you just interview them, for example, people act or react when you, for example, display or show off yourself.
Uh-huh.
This is something natural that happens because according to the physicians, when there are two men and women together in a place just talking, not having any kind of, let's say, sexual desires, there not any kind of sexual kind of talk between them, a very normal talk when there's between two strangers, men and women, they say that there are a kind of special kind of things that would physically be produced in the brains of men and women.
That's right.
That actually
especially
motivate
the sexual, sensual part of the brain.
Exactly.
That's right,
that motivate them towards that kind of sexual
the
desire.
Kind of irritating power. Naturally.
Yes. It is proven. If they search, they will find that the physicians, the doctors, and also the psychologists are of this view.
All right.
So that is why Islam says that you have to consider this nature.
Very good.
Yeah? That is why Islam says that if you ladies want to live very with dignity, with honor, with respect, you have to be careful. But of course, hijab is for men as well. Sometimes we only think that hijab is only for women.
Yes.
No, because hijab is not only covering the body, physical aspect of hijab is important, but the most important aspect of hijab is the intention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way you behave, what is your intention? Sometimes, for example, you may cover the entire body.
All right.
You even put, for example, what we can say, niqab or burqa.
A burqa on your face, that's right.
But the way you act, the way you speak, then of course everybody would understand.
Might be irritating, that's sexually and motivated.
Exactly.
That's right.
Why the intention is also important.
Very
the
good.
Mentality you have is also important. It's not only for women, for men also, because men should also control their eyes.
Very good.
Control their tongue. Control, you know, this kind of control men should also observe. So that's why we can say that we have hijab of eyes for men. Yeah, men should also observe this hijab.
Good.
Men should also observe the hijab of tongue.
That's right.
They should not speak. They should not talk to the ladies in a way that it motivates them or irritates them. That is why hijab is very, very deep kind of, or with different kind of layers.
That's right.
Yeah, there are some, the surface of these doctrines of Islam is this, that okay, physically we should cover, for example, our body.
All right.
But when you go deep, the deeper layer of hijab is the intention, the mentality, the beliefs, the way that you behave. All of these can be considered as a kind of hijab in Islam.
I could really remember it was a national team, I mean gymnastic, of the ladies in Germany, who asked their federation in order to give them a kind of cloth that covers, we can say, top to toe, I mean from neck to toe, because they said that we are not sexual objects for the pleasure of the men who are watching the sports. I mean, and there are so many movements out in the Western world, even the ladies who are after the rights, Me Too or something like that. I'm not talking about the first steps that the women take in order to get into the industry through the nakedness or nudity or something like that. But nowadays, they could see the disadvantages of the nudity in the movies and the cinema industry. And the good news is that so many of the ladies in the Western world are selecting hijab as a way to getting back into tranquil, serene lifestyle, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. You find that many women, as you mentioned, choosing this kind of covering. Because according to the verse of Noble Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that ذَلِكَ أَدْنَا أَن يُعْرَفْنَ فَلَا
يُؤْذَيْنَ.
Part of the philosophy of hijab is to be covered and not to be disturbed by other people, you know. And because of that, they want to maintain the family, they want to maintain the serenity, calmness, and because of that, they choose this concept of hijab. As I said that, yes, thank to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, many women that have been choosing this, you know, kind of covering because of this philosophy that we have been mentioned. They want to have their own family,
that's
they
right.
want to enjoy their life.
Okay.
Yes, and because of that,
and get back to the normal type of
lifestyle.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
Recently, there was one of the big cases was the lifestyle of a former porn star,
Yeah.
Ra Lil Black. And in fact, the Japanese porn star who converted to Islam, we can say, deleted all her photos from Instagram, you know, the nude pictures, and converted to Islam and started to, we can say, observe hijab.
Exactly.
And when she was asked why so, she said, I want to get back to the normal lifestyle, the spiritual lifestyle, and the respect that the ladies have in Islam is really, really important for me.
Exactly, my brother. I'm wondering that this nudity is not modernity.
That's right.
I don't know why people confuse these two concepts.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Nur Muhammad and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of hijab. It was very kind of you. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, please visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted, 'cause I know that one day suddenly this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you to be pleased with me.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Thank you.
limelight.
Donald Trump's tariffs have battered the U.S. stock market and triggered political backlash and widespread consumer concerns. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the details. Global Times wrote, following the announcement of U.S. President Donald Trump's sweeping new tariffs, U.S. stock markets have been rattled for two consecutive days. Amid widespread opposition, Trump announced a sweeping reciprocal tariff policy recently, setting a baseline tariff of 10% on all imported goods, with higher tariffs on many countries, as reported by U.S. media. U.S. stocks were battered by a steep sell-off recently after China retaliated against the United States for Trump's tariffs, according to CNN. The Dow plunged by 2,231 points, or 5.5%. The broader S&P 500 was 5.97% lower. The tech-heavy Nasdaq Composite was 5.82% lower. The Nasdaq closed in a bear market for the first time since 2022, down more than 20% from its record high in December, according to CNN. According to CNN, the Dow closed in correction down more than 10% from its record high in December. It is the first time the Dow has closed in correction since March 7, 2022, according to Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist at CFRA Research. The Dow posted its biggest back-to-back losses since March 2020. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said recently that Trump's tariff policy will hike prices and slow economic growth, and it is now becoming clear that the tariff increases will be significantly larger than expected. Policy changes implemented by the White House have contributed to a highly uncertain outlook, Powell said, making the remarks as stocks plummeted amid an escalating global trade war, as reported by ABC News. While the Fed has not issued a U.S. recession forecast, Powell noted that outside analysts have increased their recession probabilities. He said, while tariffs are highly likely to generate at least a temporary rise in inflation, it's also possible the effects will be more persistent. Trump is also facing mounting opposition from Republican senators over his sweeping plan to impose steep tariffs on nearly 200 countries, including the U.S. biggest trading partners and allies, according to Newsweek. More than half a dozen Senate Republicans have pushed back on the president's tariffs so far. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas told Fox Business, "Tariffs are a tax on consumers, and I'm not a fan of jacking up taxes on American consumers." Joshua Blank, who runs the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas in Austin, told Newsweek that the state will likely feel more pain than most other states as a result of Trump's tariffs because of the critical role that foreign trade plays in its economy. Following the sweeping tariffs on imported goods, Americans have been also busy adding to cart, according to a report by the Wall Street Journal. A 22-year-old public policy major at Southern Methodist University said that the tariff news has been the talk of the campus, especially for its potential impact on food prices,
and that she and her friends have been watching the stock market and worrying about the economy they're set to graduate into. Economists said tariffs will likely raise prices consumers pay for produce, clothing, electronics, cars, and many other goods, according to Wall Street Journal. U.S. billionaire Mark Cuban also took to the social media platform Blue Sky to remind his followers that it's time to start stocking up recently. He said, "It's not a bad idea to go to the local Walmart or big box retailer and buy a lot of consumables now, from toothpaste to soap. Anything you can find storage space for, buy before they have to replenish inventory." Cuban said in the post, "Even if it's made in the United States of America, they will jack up the price and blame it on tariffs." At supermarkets and electronics stores, some customers seem to be heeding Cuban's advice, lugging packed carts through parking lots, according to Wall Street Journal. Others went about their day-to-day shopping, saying they would deal with price increases if and when they started showing up on the shelves.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes killed dozens more civilians across Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war on the besieged territory. Palestinian officials in Gaza say Israeli forces are committing a shocking genocide against children, killing nearly 500 kids over the past 20 days. Hamas fires a salvo of rockets into the occupied Palestinian territories in response to the Israeli regime's renewed genocide in the Gaza Strip. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. The Israeli regime is pressing ahead with its air and artillery strikes across Gaza, with the southern parts of the blockaded territory being the focal point of the latest attacks. At least six people were killed and over two dozen injured after Israeli war